Hello, this is World Business Report from the BBC World Service, where we bring you the latest in money, marketing, manufacturing, and yes, much, much more. Please review us, rate us, share us wherever you can. BBC podcasts are supported by advertising.
Wir bei Vertex wissen, dass die Geschwindigkeit des globalen Handels zunimmt, was eine Steuerverwaltung komplexer macht. Und ihre unternehmenseigenen Systeme sind nicht dafür ausgelegt, diese Steuerkomplexität zu bewältigen. Hier setzen wir mit unserer Plattform an, die Continuous Compliance ermöglicht. So erhalten Sie mehr Transparenz, mehr Genauigkeit und mehr Vertrauen in Ihre Steuerdaten. Sie wollen mehr über Continuous Compliance erfahren? Dann besuchen Sie vertexinc.com/de.
If you're hearing this, you're probably already listening to BBC's award-winning news podcasts. But did you know that you can listen to them without ads? Get current affairs podcasts like Global News, Americast and The Global Story, plus other great BBC podcasts from history to comedy to true crime, all ad-free. Simply subscribe to BBC Podcast Premium on Apple Podcasts or listen to Amazon Music with a Prime membership. Spend less time on ads and more time with BBC Podcasts.
Hello and welcome to World Business Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Roger Hearing, and on this edition, the morning after, how are global share markets absorbing the impact of the Fed's big interest rate cut? Also, we hear from Lebanon's business community on the challenges of working under the shadow of increasing violence. And the social media site X now says it's cooperating with Brazil, but the ban remains and X's brief return to accessibility seems to be over. We'll bring you the latest on that. But let's start with, well, what was yesterday's big story, actually, the dramatic cut in interest rates by the US Federal Reserve. The first cut in 4 years by them and a big signal to the markets about the direction the Fed thinks the world's biggest economy has taken. So, 24 hours later, what do the markets make of it? Well, I'm joined by Walter Todd, President and Chief Investment Officer at Greenwood Capital. Walter, thanks for being with us. I mean, we've been talking about records, I think, in terms of today's market indexes.
Yeah, new high on the S&P. I think new high on the Dow as well. So, a little bit of a delayed response, as you said. We kind of went chopped all over the place yesterday after the official announcement and press conference, but certainly took off today in the equity markets. And I guess people are asking the question, you know, why did they go 50 when the equity market's sitting here at all-time highs? And I think Powell made it pretty clear that they're trying to get ahead of, you know, any potential weakness in the labor market here to front run that and not be behind. But he also wanted to make sure the market didn't think they're going to go 50 at every meeting. So he tried to caution them not to extrapolate 50 basis points forward.
Yeah, and it's interesting on the importance, significance, of course, of what goes on with the Fed and the U.S. economy, because it seemed to be a tide that raised all boats, I mean, right across the world pretty much.
Yeah, it was definitely a risk-on move in equities. But interestingly, this is a little bit counterintuitive for folks, is that when the Fed cut rates a half a point, interest rate, the market interest rates actually went up. So the 10-year interest rate is about 10 basis points or 0.1% higher than it was prior to this announcement. And the reason for that is rates have moved significantly lower in anticipation of the Fed, you know, starting this process of lowering rates.
Yeah, it is interesting how it all works. And, of course, the bond market in some ways didn't look quite so happy, did it?
No. Again, you know, the spread between the 2-year yield and the Fed funds rate had been historic wide here in the U.S. And so the bond market was really kind of, you know, screaming at the Fed somewhat to get going. And they answered that call. And so now that spread is compressed a little bit. But again, a little bit counterintuitive for folks to see interest rates go up as the Fed cuts rates here.
Now, Walter, I said the tide, the rising tide lifts all boats. Was that true right across the piece? I mean, was it the tech stocks that were going up? What sort of stocks were really riding this one most prominently?
Yeah, it's a great question. So we had two kind of dynamics in the market. One is small cap stocks, smaller capitalization stocks, which are more reliant on debt and need lower rates. They did better than large cap stocks. But within the market as a whole, you did see kind of the big three sectors, technology, consumer discretionary, and communication services were the best performers. And that's kind of the playbook from the the first half of this year, which is a little bit surprising to me. I thought it would be a bit broader in the market. But overall, you know, very good day.
Yeah, and I mean, looking further forward now, I mean, the Fed was certainly suggesting there are going to be more of these. I mean, but then this one had kind of been baked in already. So what are the markets guessing for the rest of this year?
Yeah, so the rest of this year, you know, the Fed kind of said they're going to go two more times, you know, two meetings, 25 or quarter point at each of those meetings. That's their base case. The market's expecting a little bit more, and this is the problem with the Fed communicating with the market clearly, is the Fed always, I mean, the market always wants more, right? When you give them what they want, they want a little more. So the market's kind of pricing in maybe up to three quarter point cuts, so another 50 basis point cut at some point. And then next year, the Fed saying another one percentage point cut. But again, the market's pricing in a bit more than that.
And always the risk of over expectation and under delivery, which can cause its own problems. Walter, stay with us. We're going to come and talk to you a bit more about the markets in a little while. But now we're just going to turn our attention to Lebanon, because these are nervous hours in this country. After the last few days of exploding pagers and walkie-talkies, Israel, widely blamed for those attacks, says its battle plans for the Israel-Lebanon border have been approved. There are reports that they want to create a buffer zone. It's been mocked by Hezbollah, which on Thursday killed two Israeli soldiers in cross-border shellfire. Israel has been bombing Hezbollah sites in southern Lebanon over the past few hours. The U.S. Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, expressed his concern at the prospects of an escalating crisis in the region.
Friends of the United States are united in calling for restraint and urging de-escalation when it comes to the Middle East in general and when it comes to Lebanon in particular. We continue to work to get a ceasefire for Gaza over the finish line. We believe that remains both possible and necessary. But meanwhile, we don't want to see any escalatory actions by any party that make that even more difficult.
Antony Blinken. So under this shadow of conflict, how much is normal life possible in Lebanon? The country has had a major economic crisis for almost a decade now. And added to that, this week's explosions and, of course, the fear of a war, as Hezbollah has confronted Israel for almost a year now. I've been speaking to Hani Bosali. Now, he's the owner and CEO of Bosali Foods in Beirut and a prominent member of the board of the Beirut Traders Association.
In spite of all the bad news, and what happened in the last 2 days is really terrible, irrespective whether you are with or against whatever happened, people being mutilated, thousands of people, this is really insane. But on basically for the average Lebanese, it's business as usual. We're still doing our business. We're going to our home. We're going to our businesses. Everything is open in the evening. I wouldn't say that we are in the best shape, but it is really life as usual, in spite of everything. This is the Lebanese spirit.
Well, it is, but I know that you've had a deep economic crisis for a long time. I've spoken to friends who say it's almost impossible to draw money out of banks, to buy things in the normal way. How do you get around that?
Well, you know, what you're talking about is true, but that was about 2-3 years ago. Since then, I wouldn't say that we have rebounded, but the economy have readjusted. Definitely, it's a cash economy, but we can say now, of course, you know, we have to separate before October 7th of last year and after that, because since then, you know, the things haven't been quite in a good shape. But I would say that in 2023 and even 2024, the economy have, in a way, adjusted. Salaries have a little bit adjusted. The currency has stabilized. And all over, business has come back to workable levels. What you are mentioning about during, you know, the crisis, during the COVID era was really a very dark time for Lebanon, but after that, things have moved a little bit on the positive side until October 7th of last year, whereby Lebanon is really in the eye of the storm, and the future is unknown.
Well, it must be very difficult. I mean, tourism, I imagine, has completely dried up. Investment, foreign investment, I imagine, is very hard to come by in these circumstances.
Tourism has, you know, Lebanon doesn't, unfortunately, Lebanon cannot rely on foreign tourism. What we rely on is the Lebanese diaspora who come to visit their parents, their relatives during the summer and during the feast. We had a promising summer up till mid-August, whereby the hostilities in the south were a little bit accelerated. And then it was a really deep hit on the tourism sector to Lebanon. We were hoping for some kind of a recovery, and the influx of foreign currency coming mainly from Lebanese expatriates and some Arab tourists, like from Iraq and from Jordan and from Egypt, not really from the Gulf. Unfortunately, this has not been up to the expectations that we were receiving, that we were expecting, because of the hostilities that happened in the south.
And that must make things very hard to plan, because you know that there is clearly trouble now. There may be a lot more trouble coming. As a businessman, how do you plan what you're going to do?
I would say yes, definitely. There is nothing that you can plan for. We just plan one day at a time. But we, as traders, as importers, as industrials, we cannot just work one day at a time. You know, if I have to order goods, let's say now we are in September, we have started already to plan for for March 2025, whereby you have both Ramadan and Easter. So now we have already planned for Christmas. Christmas is already behind us. I mean, I'm talking about Christmas 2024, because whenever, you know, if you have your goods ready in the warehouse by November, you should have ordered them already. So we have already passed the Christmas area, and we are now starting to plan for Ramadan and for Easter. So we are really looking forward. We just blindly close our eyes and work as if there is no hostilities, there is no war coming out to us. Because if you just plan if you are just fearing for the war, fearing that something might happen, then you might as well close your business and stay home. The Lebanese people, in spite of everything, are very resilient people. In spite of everything, the country, and especially the private sector, is functioning. And I wouldn't say functioning in a very efficient way, but we are functioning against all odds, and we are now planning for 6 months ahead.
Well, that suggests you're very hopeful, doesn't it? Either over-optimistic or just, I don't know, hopeful in general.
I would say we are pragmatic. I wouldn't say over-optimistic. This is our country. We are there. Everybody as normal citizen are quite conscious and are quite afraid, we're not really comfortable about what's happening in the region, in the south of Lebanon, in the north of Israel, in Beirut. Even this afternoon, there was some hostilities. There was sound barriers. There was, planes flying all over. It is not a situation that a normal, between quotes, a normal citizen would bear. But as far as we are concerned, if we are just focusing on the bad things, then we might as well close down and stay home. However, we are resilient people. We are always looking on the positive side in spite of everything. And this is how Lebanon is surviving.
Hani Bousali speaking to me from Beirut a couple of hours.
Rising temperatures,
the extreme weather,
melting ice,
they're all interconnected.
How can we solve this?
The Climate Question is the podcast exploring why we find it so hard to save our own planet.
We have many of the tools that we need.
And how we might change that.
If we do smart things right now, we can take care of our descendants.
It is a question of awareness, it is a question of information and access to that information.
The Climate Question from the BBC World Service.
It is based on experience and it is based on science.
Listen now wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
months ago. You're with World Business Report from the BBC World Service. Let's return now to Walter Todd. We were talking earlier, Walter, of course, in the programme about the impact of what happened with the Fed cutting rates. But there's been plenty else happening, and actually some shares going up for not that reason. Nike is what I'm talking about. Nike's CEO says he's going to leave, going to retire, but the shares have gone up.
Yeah, that's not a good feeling, I guess, when you're him and the shares go up 9% on the announcement you're leaving. Yeah, so John Donahoe is the CEO. He's been there since the beginning of 2020 and had a real good start to his tenure in 2021. Did some, a lot of good things with digital sales during COVID, but had a tough few years here. And so execution issues, competition issues, and, you know, obviously the board felt like there was a need for a change.
Okay, let's move our attention then to FedEx. Now, this is interesting. We've had some numbers out, and their shares fell in after-hours trading. What is it that FedEx is showing them that the people don't like?
Yeah, this is a good reminder that for all the focus on the macro, you know, the cutting of the 50 basis points and the risk on, it all comes back to, you know, company fundamentals. And in this case, FedEx missed earnings expectations pretty significantly this afternoon. And I really think it's more of a cost issue and also a margin issue related to FedEx Express. But the bottom line is they missed EPS by about 25% versus expectations. So the stock is, you know, down about 10% as a result of that. So as we focus, move from the Fed to individual company earnings in the first couple of weeks of October, you know, this will be the kind of thing we'll be watching and listening for.
And it is interesting with FedEx, isn't it, Walter? Because, I mean, the economic good time for them were, of course, and delivery firms generally, was during the pandemic. And now we've moved beyond it. It shows the way things are changing, I guess.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I don't know about you. I still have a lot of boxes showing up at my house, but they're not losing business for me. But yeah, you're right. I mean, I think, you know, there's been a lot of transition coming out of COVID and then normalizing. And that's been a big issue. It's been tough to forecast for the companies themselves, but also for investors in terms of that process playing out. But yeah, they're hitting a bit of a speed bump at the moment.
And finally, let's talk about oil prices. Now, this has been really interesting. A lot of headlines about what the U.S. is doing with its backup store of oil and energy generally, but oil prices have, well, they've risen quite a bit. What is it telling us about the energy market at the moment?
Yeah, so your oil has bounced here in the last few days, but really, if you go back for a couple of months, it's you know, headed lower, kind of in a straight line from the, you know, low 80s to the high 60s. I think it's a function of concerns around economic growth, not so much in the United States, but outside the United States. You know, we got some bad economic news out of Germany recently. China's struggling, all big consumers of oil. So I think the concern has been around the demand, but also there's significant supply. The U.S. continues to pump at record levels. And so you just have that imbalance that has put pressure, downward pressure on oil. But now a recent bounce, perhaps because of some of the geopolitical issues you were discussing earlier.
Well, I was going to just jump in on that, because obviously we normally, when you talk about oil prices moving, it tends to reflect what's going on in the Middle East. And we know there is a problem there. Is that still a major factor? Because, of course, the U.S. isn't dependent on Middle East oil anymore.
It's not, and the world is less dependent on it, but I would have thought that oil would have had a firmer, you know, firmer price over the past, you know, 2, 3, 4 months, at least you could go back a year, right? Because we've had these issues kind of ongoing and they kind of flare up, but it really has not been any support for the price of oil, at least not recently, yeah, until, you know, again, the last few days.
Walter, thanks for taking us through that. Walter Todd there, bringing us up to speed with other things that have been going on in the financial area in the last 24 hours. The dispute between Brazil and the social media platform X has taken another rather strange turn. X has been banned in Brazil after Elon Musk refused to remove dozens of right-wing accounts accused of spreading fake news. And then he failed to name a new legal representative in the country, as had been ordered by Brazil's Supreme Court. Now, X, which has more than 22 million users in Brazil, then got around the ban on Wednesday with an update to the site that made it accessible again, for some Brazilians at least. Well, a furious Supreme Court judge there in Brazil, Alexandre de Moraes, said in a court order a recalcitrant X had unlawfully, persistently, and intentionally failed to respect judicial orders, and said it would face a daily fine of just over $900,000 until it suspended its service again. Well, now, several developments in the last few hours. X has appointed a new lawyer who told BBC Brazil that the company has decided to comply with all the court orders. At the same time, we've been getting reports, in fact, that people can't access X in Brazil again for some reason. I mean, I hope you're staying with all this. Let's bring ourselves up to speed and get some real information from Lais Martins, an independent tech journalist based in Sao Paulo. Lais, thanks for being with us. So first of all, bring us up to speed. Can people access X in Brazil right now?
Hi, very nice to be with you all. So at the moment, no one is able to access X in Brazil anymore. And even yesterday, I think only some people could. I wasn't among the lucky ones to be able to take a peek into what is happening there. So right now it's again blocked. But as you said, we've had major developments in the last few hours. So who knows what tomorrow will look like?
Well, it does feel that way because it's been moving a lot, this story. And one of the interesting things is, in fact, I think it was a bit of a scoop by BBC Brazil, who spoke to the new lawyer that X has, who said, actually, no, they're going to completely cooperate with the Brazilian authorities. So what do you read into that?
Yeah, I'm actually surprised. We were caught off guard. There was definitely a change in tone. If you look at what Musk was saying, and even the way he was writing on his X profile around the time of the ban, and when you compare it to now, this cooperation position is very new. I wonder what happened in the X headquarters during these 2 weeks where they did not have the Brazilian users, but definitely there must have been some pressure, probably from investors, that led Musk to kind of change his mind. So yeah, that's what happened. So now there are two lawyers responding for X in Brazil. It's still unclear whether they will be the legal representatives, which was exactly what the court was requiring of X. But we should have this information in the next few hours as to whether the Supreme Court will accept their nomination.
Well, I was going to say, and will that mean that within the next few hours, potentially, it could all be turned back on?
Potentially, yes, because this was the last lingering point that Musk has not complied from the court order. So, yeah, the fines were, at least they're claiming the fines were paid. We know that some of the right-wingers' profiles were blocked, which was the initial demand from the Supreme Court. And this would be the last remaining point. So if this is settled, I don't see a reason as to why it would still be blocked.
Have you missed X, Lais, really and truly?
No, no. And I think the big discussion in Brazil right now is, are we staying on Blue Sky, which kind of came up as the X alternative? Yeah. That's where Brazilians migrated to. People are discussing whether they want to go back. It's a tough one.
Would you go back or not? Would you not be bothered?
No, I wouldn't. I locked my profile. It was a professional profile. I locked it right before it went down, and I would stay on Blue Sky.
All right. Lais, thanks so much for being us. Lais Martins there. Thanks. In Sao Paulo. But in all this, there is no denying that big tech firms are coming up against politics more and more. X's owner, Elon Musk, gave Donald Trump, of course, his backing to win this year's US election, hosting a two-hour-long live-streamed conversation on the social media platform X. But the man also owns Tesla, of course. And is he representative of the big tech world? What does this hugely important sector of the US economy really want from whoever wins November's election? Ed Butler's been finding out.
In this, as in most US elections, most of the bigwigs of big tech, the likes of Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg or Jeff Bezos of Amazon, tend to keep their political affiliations to themselves. But is that now changing?
You know, we could build a base on the moon. We could send American astronauts to Mars. We could build high-speed connections that are...
That's the world's richest man, Elon Musk, in conversation with Donald Trump last month on his social media platform X. The Tesla and SpaceX boss has very publicly backed the Trump presidential campaign, and he's not alone. Along with Elon Musk, one or two others have begun to express publicly their Republican sympathies.
Here we go.
Hello, everybody.
Hello, Mr. President.
The billionaire technology investor David Sacks is one. If you've never heard of David Sacks, he's the founder of the business social network service Yammer and an early investor in companies like Facebook, Uber and SpaceX.
I love David's house. What a house. That made the biggest impression, huh?
Thank you, sir. I heard you have a pretty nice house, too.
That's David Sacks talking to Donald Trump in his podcast All In earlier this year. So are these podcasting tech bros, as they are sometimes called, typical of the wider industry? And what is it that they all want from the next occupant of the White House anyway?
I recently read, you know, they want to rethink if President Trump was reelected, you know, who is at the FTC.
Dr. Nicole Turner-Lee is director of the Center for Technology Innovation at the Brookings Institution. She says one thing most tech companies would like is fewer rules and regulations, and it's an area that sets the Democrats and the Republicans apart.
I think if you're a Republican, you want to get rid of some of the regulatory guardrails that were instituted by the Biden-Harris administration. I also think you're going to be looking for a more lenient tax structure. If you're a Democrat, I think you're looking for the same type of pro-regulation stance. But you also may be looking for some ways to continue what the Biden administration did when it came to coming up with some voluntary commitments between tech and society. I think you're also going to be looking for some leeway when it comes to immigration policies so that you can get the workers to the job.
President Trump, if you look at the tech industry, he has clearly telegraphed that he will be an accelerationist president for America.
That's Jacob Hellberg, a technology expert and an advisor to tech companies that include Palantir and Google. He's a former Democrat donor himself who's now switched his allegiance to give more than $1 million to the Trump campaign.
Donald Trump has made it very clear that he wants to crack down on illegal immigration and he wants to support legal, high-skilled, merit-based immigration. He's also made it clear that he is in favor of tariffs with China, which would help accelerate the reshoring of supply chains. And he is for reindustrializing America, which would actually be good news for the establishment of new large computing clusters in the U.S.
One person who will definitely not be casting his vote for Donald Trump, though, is Michael Moritz.
There is no chance that Trump will do well in this area.
He's a journalist turned billionaire tech investor, best known for backing the likes of Google, PayPal and YouTube in their earliest days.
I think these people and a couple of others that you've mentioned have large megaphones because of their presence on various social media channels. But if you look at the raw numbers in Silicon Valley, he will be hard pressed to top 20% of the vote. So the publicity surrounding some of these very high-profile people is extremely misleading.
Sarah Briner is a director of research and strategy at Open Secrets. It's an organization which tracks the money in U.S. politics.
We were talking about these big tech donors back before Biden dropped out of the race. And since then, you haven't heard as much enthusiasm from these folks about Trump.
So we don't really know. Who is the most popular amongst the techies? Is it Trump or Harris?
Not yet, because there's a lag in the reporting. We'll see.
Sarah Briner there talking to Ed Butler, ending his report. If you want to hear the full version of Ed's report on tech and politics, search for Business Daily wherever you get your BBC podcasts and you can hear it there. Now, just before we go from World Business Report, I'll just keep you up to date on the latest developments in regard to Lebanon. Of course, a lot of eyes on that. Delta Airlines has announced that it's suspending direct flights between New York and Tel Aviv through to the end of the year amid rising tensions in the Middle East. That line dropping in the last few moments, clearly people being very concerned about what may be happening there. We'll keep you posted. But that's it from World Business Report from all of us here. Bye-bye.
Rising temperatures,
the extreme weather,
melting ice,
they're all interconnected.
How can we solve this?
The Climate Question is the podcast exploring why we find it so hard to save our own planet.
We have many of the tools that we need.
And how we might change that.
If we do smart things right now, we can take care of our descendants.
It is a question of awareness. It is a question of information and access to that information.
The Climate Question from the BBC World Service.
It is based on experience and it is based on science.
Listen now wherever you get your BBC podcasts.